Good morning. I'd like to call the meeting to order this morning at 7:30 of the In-State Energy Committee. It was convened at 7:30 a.m. March 26, 2013. This morning, the following members are present. Co-chair Senator Coghill. Senator Giesel's joining us again. Good morning, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Senators Egan and Senators Michicki and myself, Senator Bishop. I'd like to recognize Christopher Dickrell and Lori Berg and also my staff, Pete Fellman. Before we get started, again, we've all ate breakfast, but silence your cell phones or we'll have donuts again. So before we get I'm going to try to introduce our guests here today from Tanana Chiefs, and I thank you folks for coming down and making this presentation today. And I think members of the committee we know, but I think we'll see in pretty graphic detail the cost of energy in the bush. And Dave, if you would come up and bring whoever else you'd like to have come up to the table with you this morning. I see we got friends and old friends and family in the audience from Tanana Chiefs. So I'm a hockey fan. And I know your Dave's pretty common. I get that, but I'm just gonna go to Dave Messier because I like hockey. So if you want to explain your middle name to me, that'd be great for the record.
I wish it was my middle name. It's actually part of my last name. Okay. It's hyphenated. But I always get that question, and I don't get free hockey tickets.
Yeah,
I wish we did though.
So the floor is yours, and introduce yourself and. Julie, put your name on the record for the committee, and then let's roll.
Excellent. Thank you, Senator Bishop. My name is Dave Polunas-Messier. I'm the Rural Energy Coordinator for Tanana Chiefs Conference.
My name is Julie Roberts-Hyslop. I'm Vice President for Tanana Chiefs Conference, just recently elected.
Congratulations.
From Tanana, Alaska.
And so this morning we wanted to take a little bit of time to introduce folks to Tanana Chiefs Conference and then to talk a little bit about the energy situation that we're experiencing out in rural Alaska. So TCC is a tribal consortium. We've got 42 member communities and represent 39 different villages and 37 federally recognized tribes. The mission of the Tanana Chiefs Conference is to provide a unified voice in advancing sovereign tribal governments through the promotion of physical and mental wellness, education, socioeconomic development, and the culture of the interior Alaska Native people. And a big way that energy fits into that in a big way in terms of socioeconomic development and also adding strength to our communities. TCC is composed of about 235 square miles, or 37% of the state of Alaska. Dorion, our regional regional corporation, is the largest landowner in the state. And Julie is going to talk a little bit about her experiences in Tanana. She lives in Tanana and is experiencing the cost of high energy firsthand. So I'm going to hand it over to Julie.
Thank you. Thank you, Senators, for allowing us to speak today. I think it's a great opportunity to let you know what it's like living out in rural Alaska. I've lived there all my life, born and raised in Tanana, and just seeing the cost of living go up tremendously, and especially, you know, the cost of energy. Tanana is only about 130 miles from Fairbanks, which is fairly close. Most of our goods are, you know, brought in by the small airlines, but in the summertime we have access to the barge system. And just about a year or two ago, we've started exploring the feasibility of a road to Tanana. And so it's going to go from Manly Hot Springs down to the Yukon River, about 8 miles above Tanana. And so we're hoping to, you know, work with the state of Alaska and get that road built. So that way we could kind of bring some of these goods, you know, right directly to the river. And so right now, a cost of gasoline, I fill up my snow machine about once a week, which is a little bravo. And it costs me $30 for 5 gallons of gas and $10 for a quart of oil. So it costs me $40 just to fill up my little snow machine that I use to get back and forth to work every day. The cost of fuel, heating fuel, is about $6 a gallon, but most people burn wood in the wintertime. And so, you know, that really makes a difference in our community. And in town, we've been working really hard on trying to explore different types of renewable energy, and biomass is one of the areas that we've been really expanding on, especially in our laundry facility, and we're just finishing up the school system, getting that hooked up to biomass, and a lot of our different city buildings. And so, you know, we're trying to, you know, really trying to bring the cost of living down here. But it's in the rural villages, you know, Tanana is a lot like the other villages, you know, where, you know, the cost, you know, to get a lot of our goods there, you know, is just amazingly high. But, you know, that's where we choose to live. That's where most of us are from. And so, you know, that's by choice that we live there. And, you know, it's a beautiful place to live. And I really hope, you know, that we can work together to try to bring, you know, some solutions to these energy costs in rural Alaska. And I think, you know, a lot of villages, you know, are really looking to explore, you know, renewable energy, you know, like Tanana is doing. And so, you know, I think it's a good thing that, you know, we're sitting here today, you know, to, you know, look at, you know, all possibilities. And so, but, you know, in the Tanana Chiefs region, you know, Arctic Village is, you know, way up north, and they're paying $10 a gallon. And so, you know, that's something that we have to, because, it, you know, when you look at the cost of energy, you know, it affects everything. It affects, you know, your food costs, you know, and it affects, you know, your subsistence lifestyle. And so I think it's just really necessary, you know, for us to look at getting other solutions to these energy costs. And I like the idea of propane. I like the idea of natural gas. And so I think those are areas, you know, where I think, you know, we can really help make a difference in these villages. And I know Dave has more of the facts, you know, on different things that we're doing in the interior villages here. Thank
you. Thanks. Thanks, Julie. So the photo there is a map of some of the different resources in the state, kind of where their energy situation. And I cut out a little bit of Anchorage because I was trying to focus on the interior. But as you can see down in Anchorage, there's a big focus on gas. Same thing up in Barrow, and then in the rail belt, coal is really a good cheap energy source. But for most of the rural communities in the Doyon region, you'll see a big drop of oil because that's the predominant energy source is diesel fuel. And that's for heating, that's for electricity, and that's for transportation. So as Julie just said, it's really affecting just about every aspect of life. And so at TCC, we're looking at ways to help our communities not just lower the cost of energy, but also provide economic development and wherever possible, locally source that energy so that the communities are self-sustaining. The below graph shows the percentage of a household's income that's spent on energy. It was done by, or the ICER provided the graph through a study they did, and it shows the difference between the percentage of household incomes in 2000 and 2008 and how much were spent on energy. And as you can see, in rural Alaska, up to 47% of a household's income can be spent on energy. And so it's having a significant impact, and our community members are really feeling it. And just to give another fact, in the PCE reports, Power Cost Equalization reports show that in 2011, over 2.5 million gallons of diesel were used to electrify rural Alaska. And folks usually think of electricity as keeping the lights on, but it's also keeping the boilers running, so it's a pretty integral part of heating homes. And as energy costs go up, electricity costs go up, heating costs go up, that percentage in the graph at the bottom is going to continue to get to become a larger and larger portion of people's incomes, and it can really stifle the economic development that occurs. The photo in the image here, I don't know if folks have been out to Galena, but I went out just a couple, it was last year at some point, and I was filling up a friend's truck after I'd done some work in town, and I go over the fuel pump, and I was pretty impressed. I was like, oh man, that gas isn't that expensive. you know, I think it was about what you pay in town. It was less than $4 a gallon. I was like, this is great. Well, then I go inside and go to pay and politely inform that that pump is actually so old that it can't keep up with the current cost of gas, so you've got to double it. So kind of to give folks an overview again of what things are like in rural Alaska, the old pumps can't even keep up. And this is increasing the cost of goods out in our communities and the cost of travel in our communities. Talking to folks in Galena when they moved there, round trip to and from Galena was less than $200. Now it's about upwards of $350 to get to and from. So the cost of coming into town for basic services, healthcare, is also increasing because the cost of energy is increasing. And I guess when I first started kind of working with rural energy, big focus was on electricity. And we soon found that actually the bigger focus should be on space heating, because that's about 75% of where every energy dollar spent in rural Alaska goes is to heat a home. And I want to make another point in that these aren't just homes. These are also our stores. These are our schools that are suffering from higher energy costs. And there's a number of school districts in the TCC region that are in danger of closing because they don't have a 10-student minimum. Others are having to divert precious resources from teachers and from students over towards just covering their heating costs. And so in a number of different TCC communities, we're actively involved in working with the school district to try to make biomass a viable heat source, not to just to lower the cost of heating those schools, and then also, again, to provide more economic development for our communities. Wanted to talk also really quick about a couple of programs that don't always get a huge amount of publicity that the Alaska Energy Authority manages. One's the Village End Use Efficiency Program, the VEEP program. Another is the Rural Power Systems Upgrade Program. The VEEP program funds different entities to work in communities to go through and do basic efficiency work. And what that does is it lowers the overall base load in the community, generally on the electrical system. And if you've got a smaller base load, you need less diesel to put into your generators. You can sometimes downsize your generators. And there are some really basic measures that can be taken that will lower the cost of running those generators and will lower the diesel consumption. And again, those go towards making the communities more sustainable. The Rural Power Systems Upgrade, the RPSU program, runs out of AEA, and that program has also been one of the, I guess, the key programs in our region to help the rural utilities, not the AVEX, the smaller folks like Galena, the city of Koyukuk, the city of Ruby, small municipalities generally that run their own utilities, that have limited human resources, limited technical resources. AEA has really stepped up and assisted those communities with purchasing new generators, more efficient generators, with technical assistance related to their heat recovery systems, with technical assistance related to their distribution systems. It's really been a phenomenal program, and it doesn't get too much press, and we certainly appreciate it in the TCC region. Again, just in terms of, this is something that I like to kind of harp on. Renewable energy is really big, and it's really sexy, and people like pointing at the solar panels that they installed or the wind turbine that they put up. This is a project that I was involved with down in Nenana, actually, on the backside of the Nenana Teen Rec Center. This was in 2010. We installed these 20 solar panels, and solar actually does very, very well in Alaska. These panels are producing, you know, great amounts of energy, and more importantly, the operations and maintenance on them is exceptionally low. I've probably had maybe 3 hours of operations and maintenance on those panels in the last 2 to 3 years. For something that you can just put out in a community and kind of set it and forget it. I'm a big proponent of solar, and we don't have much wind in the TCC region, but we've got a lot of sun in the summer. The funny thing about this photo, though, and I kind of realized it when I was giving a presentation for a biomass conference that we had. Again, when I started working with energy, I was very much under the impression we needed to produce energy. Well, producing energy is always very expensive. And so if you can see those lights that are on in that photo, there's about 4 high-pressure sodium lights that are on the wall packs on the back side of the building. And I did that, crunched the numbers, and if we replaced one of those lights with a 20-watt LED, we would have canceled out the production for one of those solar panels. So it's an important, every time folks are thinking about renewable energy out in our communities, we also need to be doing that hand-in-hand with energy efficiency. And that's fan motors, pumps, lighting, smart controls, and really knowing where the energy is going in the village so you can make smart decisions. And a big part of that, I know there's been a conversation down here about getting propane out to rural Alaska, and that will definitely have an impact in our communities. The folks that I've talked to who are looking at doing the project, have the numbers that I've seen put propane into Fairbanks at less than half the current cost. And I'm not sure with shipping costs exactly what the numbers are going to be out in rural Alaska, but I'd estimate it could go down by 30% to 40%. I'd really like to see it go in half. And so when you have, again, affordable energy out in rural Alaska, you've got more opportunities for economic development, and there's a lot of synergies that you can fit propane in with other to make your existing generation or heating more efficient.
Right now, the cost of a 100-pound bottle of propane in town is $189. And I remember when your dad used to send propane down, you know, along the river, you know, that was, the costs, you know, have gone up so dramatically. It's just amazing. But we used to get propane from Coghill's store in Indiana, and that was, you know, a really good service, you know, that your family provided to our villages.
Filled my fair share.
Yeah. Thank you.
Another thing that kind of goes unnoticed too often, I think, is just basic building efficiency. And I'm glad Julie's here, because Tan and I just sponsored a resolution that passed at the TCC annual convention last week that called for the highest energy efficiency standards in the states for new buildings that are built in the TCC region. There's a gentleman up in Fairbanks, Thorsten Klupp, with Rena Properties, and he's building homes that have they call passive solar standard. And so it seemed like a very reasonable idea. We did a lot of work with Thorsten's been working out in Tanana with the city of Tanana to retrofit some of their homes. And the new standards for public buildings financed with public money in the TCC region are R100 in the roof, R70 in the walls, and R50 in the floors and slabs. And that seems a little bit ridiculous if you're used to building homes. But basically, the current model that we have is we're building inefficient buildings. It's kind of like wearing a t-shirt outside in rural Alaska. You don't do that in the middle of the winter. And so this model has us putting a down jacket over those buildings, essentially. So every drop of oil that goes into the buildings, goes into the villages, is used more efficiently. Every cord of wood that goes into the villages is used more efficiently. So we're not just trying to produce that energy or generate more of it. We're trying to use it as efficiently as possible. And then weatherization has had a huge impact in our region. The average person who receives weatherization has gotten about $2,000 back in their pocket, because it saved them about $2,000 a year in energy costs. This is a building life cycle chart that I like to point out. Again, this was done by the folks at Rena Property. And some of the pushback I hear from folks when I start talking about more efficient buildings is always, well, we can't afford it. This graph shows pretty clear you can't not afford to do efficient buildings. Shows over the 80-year life cycle cost of a building, the actual cost to design and construct it are 16% of the total amount that you're going to spend on that building over an 80-year life cycle. Only 16% of that total amount over 80 years is spent on the design and construction. But usually, those are the two items that people will fight tooth and nail to minimize. And so the point here is, if you spend a little bit more money up front, if you spend a little bit more money in the design and construction phase, you're going to have 80 years of lower maintenance costs and lower operations costs. And we don't know what the cost of energy is going to be out in our rural communities in 80 years, but we're pretty sure it's not going to be any lower. And so if a community is, to some extent, has a larger building put in, that structure can be a burden to the community, to the tribe. With shrinking budgets, we don't know the future, but we know that energy is probably going to get more expensive, and we know that there are technologies now, just through using what we already know and implementing it, and we can reduce the overall of the long-term cost of these buildings. So those are the new building standards in the TCC region for public buildings, and we're very proud of that. Biomass, there's been a lot of conversation related to biomass, and it's important to note that with biomass, it's not just a matter of, even if you've got oil in a community and you've got wood in a community, the money to pay for that oil is going right into the community and then it's leaving. The money to pay for that biomass, that wood that can be harvested locally by folks who are hungry for work, That money's coming into the community from outside sources, generally from the state, from the feds, whoever it is, and it's staying in the community. So it's not just getting sent out to Crowley, to BP, to Conoco. It's staying in the community and putting local folks to work. An example from Tanana is when the current city manager started, the number he throws out is 30,000 gallons. 30,000 gallons of diesel a year is about how much the city was importing to heat their washateria, to heat their public buildings, their fire hall, their shop. He, you know, saw a really good opportunity with the price of diesel climbing upwards and saw an opportunity for economic development. And he started replacing those oil-fired units wherever he could with biomass systems, wood gasification systems. In 2013, after what's that, about 6-7 years of that model, they're on track to reduce their consumption from 30,000 gallons of diesel for heating down to 12,000 gallons a year for heating. And the remainder of that heat is made up with biomass that can all be sourced locally. And those are decent paying jobs for folks in the community who are looking for work. And someone pointed out at a conference we had back in October that it's not just the money going in the community. There's a lot of intangible benefits when someone's got the opportunity to go out and, you know, and make a paycheck. That means something to a lot of folks, and those opportunities aren't always available on a regular year-round basis in the community. So if we can locally source energy from our rural communities, that's where we're really going to get the most overall benefit.
Okay, just one quick second so I don't get in trouble, but when you guys come back on the record, just please give your name for our Senate records people, please.
Julie Roberts Heistep. Last fall, there was an opportunity for people from Stevens Village, a village upriver from Tanana, to bring some wood into our community, and they rafted a big raft down with, I think it was like maybe 50 cords of wood that they sold to the city of Tanana. So it's not only an opportunity for the locals, but it also was an opportunity from other villages to come in and contribute, you know, to the system there.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Senator Machicki has a question.
I know you don't remember me, but I've been to Tanana. Spent some time there for a youth exchange, and I actually have met you a couple of times, but it was a few years back. Question I have is, you're on the river system. Why is coal not a consideration? It's something that stockpiles well. I mean, you've struggled for years. Why is coal not a part of your portfolio?
Senator, that's a good question, Julie. Coal, okay. I don't think we've explored, you know, enough the different types of energy that we could use, you know, and I think that's an excellent question, and I think that's something, you know, that we could perhaps, you know, look at. Because I think, you know, we're here to explore all opportunities, you know, to reduce costs in our villages. And so I will take that up as a, you know, to look at, to explore.
It's a common theme throughout the state. It's a fraction of the cost of oil, and I they are efficient. There are environmentally responsible ways to use coal, but in some of these areas where energy means survival, it's just fascinating.
I'd like to respond. Sure. You know, just to get to a lot of the villages along in our communities, you know, sometimes the barges, even though they're a good source of transportation during the fall time when the water is really low, or it's just a way of getting the energy source to the villages. That would be something that we'd have to really look at. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you could fly in, you know, tons of coal, you know, at a cost. So that's just, we'd have to look at that.
Senator Machicki brought up the coal thing. You can go about 30 miles above Rampart, and there was a working coal mine in the late 1800s for coal in the steamboats. So,
yeah, and maybe just an addition to that, if you had a highway or a road going in, it could actually change the dynamic. Mm-hmm. So, that, because I think she's right. Not only the Little River, but the Frozen River. There's only a few weeks in the year that you're going to be able to get that coal in on the river system. But in the road system, you can do it all year round. So that would probably change the dynamics.
Sure. I may
follow up.
Yeah, I agree. If you're moving oil, though, you can move coal. It's nearly as dense and a small fraction of the cost. It's just something worth looking at.
Mm-hmm. And I'll kind of add to that through the chair, Senator. One of the other reasons that I guess oil is a bit more common is because it is one of the, if not the most energy dense resource, so it is a bit easier to fly in. And then there's also the fact that almost all of our villages are just set up for diesel fuel, and so there are definitely other opportunities, and we're going to continue to look at them, but it is a bit of a mindset change, and it's also a bit of an equipment change, and so with the fluctuating cost of oil, there's, you know, it's things take a little while to catch up, so it's definitely something we're going to continue to look at. Go on. So, again, regarding biomass, about a quart of white spruce is equal to 130 gallons of diesel. And so this is something that they're utilizing both in Tanana and Tetlin. The villages of Hoosier, Hughes, Koyukuk, and Anvik are all looking at different district heating systems heating the individual buildings through the use of locally sourced biomass. And again, just to keep that money in the community and to lower the cost of energy. One of the other comments that I wanted to make is just kind of the models that I've seen that are most successful in rural Alaska are just to try to keep it as simple as possible. When you add too many moving parts, you have too many points of failure to some extent. Since the villages were established, there's been two main sources of energy. There's been diesel and there's been cordwood. Folks are well versed. They're some of the smartest people I've ever met who can get a diesel engine to run at 40 below zero. And the same thing with cordwood. You know, folks are used to the systems. They require relatively little maintenance, and that's what you need when it's 40 below and maybe the planes have stopped running. You can't just call up somebody and get them to come out. It's really, you're relying on your neighbors and the local resources.
Maybe before you go into the propane, just explain what you did on the Tanana heat for some of the, I think you had washed area. It was a central heating system. Just explain the source of wood and how you put that together, just real briefly.
Okay, Julie from Tanana. So, you know, the local people, you know, there's timber all around Tanana, and also in the springtime when the river is running, the water's really high and there's a lot of driftwood that comes down the river, and so a lot of the wood is harvested right out of the river there. It's already seasoned wood, and they don't have to go out and cut it, and so they just go out in their boats and haul it in and stack it up into cords, and then we utilize it that way.
Free delivery.
Thank you.
You put your school on the central heat with the washateria, and what else?
The city office and the fire station where our VPSO lives. That's also, and then we have some teacher units, you know, that are also on the system, and so we're trying to, you know, convert, you know, a lot of our public buildings into the biomass.
And that's been going how many years now?
I think it's been about 7 or 8 years now. Yeah, quite a few years, especially for the laundry facility, and we've seen a dramatic, you know, a reduction in oil costs, you know, just from using wood to heat the building.
I just wanted to highlight that. I thought that was, you've done a good job on that.
It's amazing, yeah.
Dave Messier again. So going on to propane, also a few weeks ago at the TCC Annual Convention, TCC passed Resolution 2013-12, which was in support of HB 74 and SB 23. Just to reiterate the fact that affordable energy is really key to any sustainable economy, and that's no different out in rural Alaska than it is in areas of the road system. Looking at the numbers that different suppliers are passing around about the trucking plan. It could decrease the cost of propane by about 50% in our communities, and that's something that everyone's really excited about. And kind of, I guess, on the specifics of that, when you start to have lower cost propane in the community, as I said, you can start switching some of the electric ranges, electric water heaters, electric dryers onto on-demand units. And what that does is, because that load isn't a potential load on the grid, you can downsize your generators. Then renewables have a much bigger impact, and then battery storage or energy storage becomes a little bit more viable. Then a lot more seems to make sense. But having that additional cheaper source of energy gives us a lot more flexibility. And again, to go back to this very simple rain barrel model, it keeps more money in the community, which is really key for overall economic sustainability. I just wanted to talk about some of the projects out in rural Alaska. This is a project, the Ruby Hydrokinetic Turbine, that's I think a few folks or a lot of folks are familiar with. I had the privilege of working on this project and managing it the final year. And it taught me quite a few things, and one of those was that any idea that seems good here in Anchorage, down in Anchorage, or in Juneau, it doesn't always translate into being a good idea out in rural Alaska. This project was, one of my favorite taglines is, let's be on the cutting edge of technology, not the bleeding edge. This is a really difficult project to install, to implement, and in the end, the organization I was with decided to pull it out of the water because we didn't feel that it was something that was sustainable, that was village scale, and more importantly, could be turned over to the community to continue operating. So when folks are looking at different technologies in the community, I think it's always really important to get a village-level perspective of what's going to work from folks who either live in the community, like Julie here, or folks who have had a significant amount of time working in the community. I know the electric utility up in Eagle had the same experience as I did with a much bigger piece of equipment and a much bigger budget. And so I'm really proud of how we spent that money and the path we took to do some research on it. Again, just to push the efficiency, this project that I worked on down in Nenana, everyone looks at the back of this building and they think, oh man, they got solar panels. They have solar hot water. Those are great. Those must be saving them a lot of money. If you look at the really simple graph, the most important thing that we did to that building was something you can't see at all. We added programmable zone valves, and we added thermostats to the building because whoever designed it didn't put either of those in. So there were balance valves, which you needed a utility person to adjust, and the effect was the heat on that in that building was on full blast, 24/7, 365. People had to open the windows in the summer and got heated out, and there were no controls in the shoulder seasons. Worked okay in the winter, though. So again, the biggest impact that we had on that building out of the money we spent was actually the lowest cost items. And it just goes to further that idea that the efficiency first and the lowest hanging fruit is where we want to spend our time and energy, because that's what's going to have the biggest impact. And that goes hand in hand with the energy model that we've developed for the TCC region, which is collect data and plan first of all. There's been plenty of money that was spent on inefficient projects that didn't work out because not the proper homework wasn't done. So collect data and plan, know your community, know where the energy's going, and be able to track it. And then focus on your efficiency, because that's where you're going to have the biggest bang for your buck. And after that, move on to renewable energy. So that's biomass and that's solar in the interior. Those are the two simplest forms of renewable energy that I've found, and I've installed quite a few myself. Because if you don't do it yourself, and you're really just relying on someone else's opinion, and I find that to be not always reliable. So just a quick example, Manly Hot Springs Tribal Council. Manly Hot Springs operates their own diesel generator. They're about half a mile away off of Manly Hot Springs from the end of the TDX line. TDX has the local utility in town. And when Manly Village Council wanted to build a few buildings on land they had, TDX was going to charge them over $100,000 to extend the line, and they said, no way, we're going to put our own generator in Alaskan Spirit. So they installed a generator, it was about 35 kilowatts. They got a great deal off some surplus equipment that the military had for about four buildings, and it was burning through about 2 gallons an hour year-round, 24/7, 365. So their bill for that diesel generator was about $70,000 a year. And I went out there and talked to some folks and kind of asked them what some of their priorities were, and they said, we need to get a better load on that generator. We need to add more electricity load to that generator system. And I was like, I don't think that's the right answer, guys. I think we need to focus on some efficiency. And so We did some homework. They got some funding to replace the generator that was going through about 2 gallons per hour. We looked around at the buildings that they had, what their loads were. It had about 6 kilowatts of electric heat, 9 kilowatts of electric dryer, 4 kilowatts of inefficient lighting, and this double coil electric hot water heater that was on that was connected to probably a mop sink, and I don't even think it was connected to the shower. So they had to keep the capacity of their generator on. They had to run a 35 kW generator when in reality they weren't using 35 kW. They were using significantly less than that. So we went in, we looked at some of their loads, and we collected data, and we planned out what we were going to do. We took that 6 kW worth of electric baseboard heat, switched it to a Toyo stove. We took 9 kW of electric dryer and switched it to efficient propane dryers. We're going to take some of their electric lighting and switch it to LED lighting. And then their electric water heater switched on demand propane. We lowered the load effectively on their small microgrid. And thus, the diesel generator that they need to have on now is significantly lower fuel consumption. Their new max load went from about 35 kW down to about 16 kW. So that's a lot less diesel that you need to burn over the course of the year. About $40,000 less, we're thinking. And in the future, we're looking at switching and hopefully being able to turn off their generator at night and using battery storage with solar, because they've got a really good solar look to their south. And the folks in the community are really interested in lowering their costs and saving whatever money they can. So the main takeaways that I just wanted to again reiterate is that local and cheaper energy is going to lead to more sustainable communities. And energy is expensive. There's no two ways about it, whether it's biomass, whether it's coal, whether it's propane. It's expensive, and it makes a lot more sense to try to use that energy as efficiently as possible rather than continue to build inefficient buildings where we're just sending the heat right out into the atmosphere. And renewables are excellent, and they're locally sourced, but just want to again reiterate that they're really only part of the solution, and that whenever we talk about energy in rural Alaska, we need to take a really holistic view. So I believe that's the end of my presentation.
Questions from committee members? Senator Giesel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not really a committee member, but certainly an interested party. And I just want to congratulate you. I hope you're going around to all the villages and communities and looking at efficiency. You are sharing a lot of the things that I think need to be done in rural Alaska. Thermostats. Holy cow. I know exactly what you're talking about. As I've worked in rural Alaska in the winter, having to open the window because the building is so hot. Thanks for thinking of that, adding thermostats. I appreciate the recommendation on the insulating of the buildings, basically putting a blanket around them. My youngest son built a building in Fairbanks, a home in Fairbanks, that is this kind of R-value, R100 in the ceiling, 70 in the walls. And he actually has to open the doors if there's more than about 3 people in the house because it self-heats. So, bravo. Good job. I hope that you're spreading this information, not just around Tenino Chief's area, but throughout rural Alaska. Good job.
Thank you. Senator Regan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I echo Senator Giesel's comments. She's right on. We had a major situation here in my community where we lost our hydro, and all of a sudden we were, you know, generate our power, it didn't matter to us, it was so cheap, so we had, you know, 8-9 cents a kilowatt hour, and all of a sudden it was 54 cents a kilowatt hour. Well, lo and behold, I learned how to save energy. You know, I don't have an incandescent light in the house. I've installed a thing called a Nest, which automatically programs your thermostat, and I installed a Toyo heater. It is an incredible difference. And until you get, you know, you face the situation that you folks are facing, you know, people don't care. And, you know, I was using 1,200 kilowatt hours a month, and now I'm using less than 600 kilowatt hours a month. I mean, but you can do it. I mean, it's simple. And it's actually fun, you know, to have a 60-watt light that's only using 13 cents, or, I mean, only using 13 watts, you know, and it's easily done, and it's just the same, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But how, what are you factoring when you're talking about wood? What's your average? What were you putting in as a cord, price per cord?
Three. Through the chair, the average cost is about $250 to $300 per cord of wood. Okay. And so I believe, and I'll have to double check the number, but I think if that was at that price, the equivalent BTUs, I think it would be something like $2 a gallon for diesel, $2.40 a gallon for diesel, something like that.
Any other questions from committee members? I'd just like to do one follow-up, then we have to get to our next presenter. But just really quick, you know, Julie touched on it a little earlier in our conversation, and Julie, you can maybe validate or not validate what I'm going to say. But when the first Nuchlawoya that I went to in 1974, I would say that the population of Tanana was over 700. And 50 people in the community, and today's population is in the 300, 250, 250 range. And by bringing back jobs to the communities, and in this case, we're cutting wood and providing jobs, and Dave spoke to it, when you're out drawing a paycheck, you're feeling good about it when you get the paycheck. And I'm just looking at the health of the community. When people are out working, we've got less law enforcement problems, we've got less suicide problems, we've got a whole host of benefits besides energy that we're bringing to these communities. And I just want to applaud your efforts. And if there's no other questions, thank you. Well, Senator Machicki?
I'm sorry. What I've noticed the most, I appreciate that you're not waiting for someone to solve your energy problems. I think that's the most impressive thing. What I remembered about my trip to Tanana is the level of education of particularly the females. The female leadership in town was extremely impressive. And obviously that's worked well for your community. But I definitely applaud you. I'm always looking at a better way. And I know this committee will help any way that we can. So thank you.
And we're watching you on TV every week. Thank you. And I'd like to bring up our next presenter, if we could get your program loaded, Pete. Brief at ease. Meeting back to order, In-State Energy Committee. I'd like to bring up our next presenter. Most of you know Bernie Carl. He's also the owner of Chena Hot Springs Resort. Bernie's been kind of a pioneer leader in alternative energy in Alaska, and he's going to talk to us today about problems and solutions on alternative energies in the economy and probably a myriad of other things. So, Bernie, the floor is yours, and please carry on, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you about something that is, it's my life. First of all, there's not problems. I don't mean to correct you, Senator, but there's not problems. There's only opportunities. And I believe that is what we've done. We've taken opportunities and say that they're problems. So now it's just like Webster. Webster's got to be an idiot. He says that failure is if you don't succeed. So we teach our children that failure is if you don't succeed. So who wants to be a failure? Failure is if you don't try, and you could never fail if you don't quit. And I'm living proof of that. I've had a lot of opportunities in my life, but not a problem. For those of you that don't know me, I was born number six of 16 children, one mom and dad, and they wanted us. They wanted all of us. Can you imagine? They wanted us. And they taught us the most important thing, that God was our guide. Not money. My dad at
2 weeks old, put all of his kids on drugs. He drug us to be baptized. He drug us to church on Sunday. He drug us to tossle corn. He drug us to bale hay. He drug us to the neighbors to do their work. And he'd say, you don't need to get paid for everything you do in life. And he drug you to the woodshed and ministered love if he caught you taking money. So I've been on drugs my whole life. Maybe more kids need to be on drugs. That brings me to some hugs instead of drugs. We'll get on here now to what's really important about energy. Our vision is to become a self-sustaining community, both for the state, for all the communities in Alaska. That's what we should all do. The only reason we're not sustainable today in the state of Alaska, it's not because of money. We are the smartest population in the history of the world. We are the wealthiest population in the entire world. Do you know what we're lacking? We have no vision and we have no passion because we're addicted to oil in one arm. And we're addicted to greed in the other. And those two addictions have us where we can't even see straight. We've been stealing. We're nothing but a bunch of thieves. We've been stealing from your children and their grandchildren and their grandchildren. Shame on us. We're nothing but a bunch of drunken thieves stealing their future. Burning oil, we're 5% of the world's population. We're 5%, America's 5% of the world's population, yet we consume 25 to 30% of all the world's energy? That's why people don't like us. We are energy hogs. No one likes a hog. They see a hog, they see two hams, bacon, and sausage. Everyone likes a cute little pig. Just a cute little pig. That's what everyone needs to be, is a little pig, but not a hog. So, problems. Our fuel source is oil, because we're addicted to it. And then you have the delivery problems. And over 90% of our food is imported. Think about that a minute. Last year in America, 40% of the food that we brought into America, we imported from countries where there's no labor laws, there's no environmental laws, there's no import duty on food. Shame on us. Every economy that's gotten away from agronomy has failed. Every economy. Every world that has gotten away from agronomy. We are moving away from our roots. We no longer have morals. It has not become the most important thing in every decision. Even, gentlemen, our laws today, think about this for a moment. I mean, everything I do, but I don't care what it is, has to be morally right. But almost everything I do is illegal because there's 900,000 regulations that have been put in place since 1990. When I get done here today, the only thing I'm asking you for is no money because we have solutions, but we need relief on regulations so that people can go do things. That's what this state needs. Bigger problem other than what does the state have right now? The only thing we have is our savings account, right? Because money, we are on the downhill side of a big oil field. And that's what happens. And we got addicted to it, right? All of us are addicted to oil. I'll bet there's not a person in this room that has a family that doesn't have two vehicles. Yet I guarantee you could all get by with one. I don't mind you have two vehicles, but we need to do it smarter. We need to be smarter about it. Okay, simply put, it requires less innovation, it requires more innovation, and practical application of intelligence. That's what we need to do. You know, we don't need to... We have a real opportunity right now. How much innovation do we have? How much intelligence do we have? How much money do we have? We have enough. We have enough. But what do we do about it? What solutions do we have? Right now, you can buy a water ram. You can buy that water ram for $800. Rife Water Ram Factory. 153 years old. For $800, you can buy that. It needs no electricity. Zero operating cost. It needs 9 foot ahead. You can take a garden hose and put it in a stream. Take a 2x4 that's 9 foot long. Hook the garden hose to it. And you can figure out when you got 9 foot ahead. Put your pipe in. Run it to your water ramp. You now pump water for the whole your home or your community. We pump water 1,000 feet with that water ramp, with no parasitic load, and it lasts. It's my best employee. It always shows up to work on time. It's never once lied to me. It's never once stolen from me. It works to the best of its ability. Shows up every day on time. Works 24/7 for $800. Waters all the gardens. Waters everything. So you can do that. Or you can do a geothermal project, and the geothermal project, as you can see, had a high capital cost, or had a high research and development cost, but it's done. Now the capital cost is fairly reasonable, and you can be looking at some 6 cent electricity. Or you can grow your food. And you can do it reasonably. I mean, those are the real numbers. 75 cents for a head of lettuce. $1.50 for a pound of tomatoes. But that's doing it 365 days a year at minus 50, minus 60 below zero. And you say, yeah, but you have geothermal. We're going to show you how you do it. Where geothermal, all that is a hug from the earth. That's all it is. It's a hug from the earth. The truest thing our last governor said was drill, baby, drill. And I do not mean for oil. If we harness 2% of the Earth's energy, 2%, that is 1,000 times more energy than the world consumes. Not my number, MIT. Let's say it's only 500 times more. Let's say it's only 200 times more. Let's say it's only 100 times more. Ladies and gentlemen, if you think this war isn't over oil, we're fighting over oil. We bring 8 million barrels of oil a day into this country from countries that hate our guts. Give me a break. Drill, baby, drill, but I do not mean for oil. So is geothermal important? It's probably one of the most important energy sources in the world. Do you know why we don't have a lot of geothermal? Because we're addicted to oil, and they've done a great job addicting us. It's simple. It's easy. We like the addiction. We like being addicted. And, or you can take your cardboard and your paper. We do this in Fairbanks, Alaska. I do not recommend this for every small village. It won't work, but we're going to get around to how it does work. Does this work in a big area? Yeah, it works. It works. 10 cent electricity going back to Golden Valley. Actually, we're getting 11 and a half cents for it. Costing me 10 to make it. We get a half cent under avoided cost. Does this work in a large community? Absolutely. Does it work in small rural Alaska? Not in this form. So I'm not here to sell you on a bad idea, because I'm not asking for any money. I'm telling you, these are projects that we're going to go finance. So would I do this? Would I do this over in Galena? No, but I'll show you what we would do. This is the latest and the greatest. This will be running at Chena in 2 months. This is a 300 kW screw expander. It is a direct drive. That means it's synchronous. There's no gearbox. There's no belts. You don't lose 3 to 4% of your efficiency there. It comes in containers so that you need no foundation, you need no building. If you look at all the cost in Bush, Alaska, what happens is you have to build some infrastructure, and it's expensive. This infrastructure is built. It's what we call a plug and play. Now, we spent a lot of time developing this, and I'm telling you, it's ready for the market. It's so ready for the market, there's not one dime's worth of state or federal money in this project, and its payback is simply going to be 1 year, and there's not one dime of state or federal money, but it's going to help a lot of people, because now you have the way to make electricity from 2.5 kW up to 2.5 megawatts. We profess doing this with coal or biomass, but we will be responsible for 100% of the ash. We're taking the ash right now. This wasn't my idea. Cold Climate Housing Research Center did the research on it, except we'll be the first ones using it. If you come out to my yard right now, you'll see the glass crusher all set up, grinding the glass. We take the glass in. You'll see that we have the sodium hydroxide, and we have the sodium silicate there, and we mix it, and we make batches. We're making some of the best concrete in the world. 10,000 PSI concrete. Good for 1,800 degrees. Using all waste materials. And this is the way every village has to look at it. This is what they have to look at. I don't know what they do with their ash. They probably put it in their landfill, but I'm telling you, what a valuable resource. Cement is expensive. We're not talking about a lot of money to make this happen. We're talking about it's happening. So, this is something that everyone can afford. These are gasifiers, and off to the right, the units on the right, those are a coal burner. We profess that next year we will become the largest coal customer in the state of Alaska. We believe that we will move 650,000 tons of coal to Bush, Alaska, up and down the river systems, and we're willing to prove to each and every village that that will be the cheapest energy for the next couple hundred years. Don't get me wrong, I'm all about gas and I'm all about propane, but I'm all about sustainability. The largest amount of coal in the world is in Alaska. It's interesting. Yuzhno-Vely mine has been operating for 60 years. It's not the best mine in the state. It's the best mine in the world. They pay good wages. We put together an infrastructure to load the coal, both out of Nenana and to load the coal down in Seward and move it to Western Alaska. We have meetings next week with Nana on moving coal up to Kotzebue and showing them how much money we can save them and bring it into the Bethel region and showing that we can cut their expenses and deliver energy to them for $2 for a million BTUs, where right now they're paying 10 and 12. This is real. So it's interesting that you would mention coal, sir, because you're spot on. And why someone else hasn't done it is because we've been addicted to oil. The reason we haven't done it is very simple, the addiction. So that addiction is so expensive now that I think we're going to be getting off the addiction. This is a small home unit. That is a 2.5 kW screw right there that will, my goal is in the next 10 years that every home in Alaska is grid independent. By both using solar tubes that use 95% of the sun spectrum or by using biomass. And the oil and the gas that we all talk about, the highest and best use from C1 through C6, which is gas, should be used for petrochemicals. I'm totally against exporting any of it. I think we should have, Alaska should lead this parade in making all of the building blocks for the world. We should do it in Alaska with the highest paid jobs in the world in Alaska, and they should all be done smokestack free. Alaska should lead this parade, and we should use coal as a very, very important part of our energy future. This is a modular growing unit. We've actually sold a couple of these. We actually have one working at Chena Hot Springs. We've had it there for a few years. We can show anybody and everybody how to grow reasonably. Knowledge is not any good if it's not shared. The Chinese had a printing press 4,000 years before Gutenberg invented one. They did not share the knowledge with anyone. We don't charge for any of this knowledge. You can have it all. We don't charge if you want to use the knowledge. You come there, we give away energy tours twice a day. You learn about all this. Last year we had over 6,000 kids go on these energy tours. This year over 15,000 will go. They learn about sustainability. It does not cost the school or the state one dime.
Senator Marchicky has a question.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Carl, I should probably know this, but who are you and who is we?
We is my mother. I mean, excuse me, my wife. I'm sorry. And it's Chena Hot Springs Resort and Chena Power and K&K Recycling is, but they're family owned between my wife and myself. Yeah, we have 140 employees in the state. We have operations in we have operations at Chena Hot Springs, we have operations in Fairbanks, K&K Recycling and Chena Power, we have Valdez Recycling in Valdez, we have operations on the North Slope that have camps and shops on the North Slope and recycling, and we have a lodge in Kodiak called Kodiak Narrow Cape Lodge. We've been here. I'm an American by birth, I'm an Alaskan by choice, I've been here for 40 years. You couldn't run me out of here with a switch.
Excellent, thank you.
Any more questions, sir?
Not right now.
Carry on.
So these grow units are something that we manufacture in Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm going to tell you, I believe I have the best workforce in the world. I would put them up against anybody. I have a welder that can weld the crack of dawn and can weld a broken heart. And that's when you can really weld. He doesn't do good work, he does excellent work because they put in the extra 5%, and that's the difference between good and excellent. These modular grow chambers, you can grow all the food for your animals right now. If you go to Bush, Alaska, or you go anywhere in Alaska, things are expensive. They're expensive. We buy barley. We buy barley in Delta. There's never been a failure of a barley crop in Delta, Alaska. 84,000 acres of farm ground, only 12,000 acres currently in production. Shame on us. I told them they'll have it all in production because I will find a home for all their barley. We take their barley, I buy it for $160 a ton, I haul it up to Chena Hot Springs, Alaska. I plant it in this grow chamber. I use no herbicides, no pesticides. I use no fertilizer. I call it biomimicry, mimicking what God does. I use the nutrient that's in the seed. We plant it just with water, no soil. We push it down every day. I plant 72 pounds of seed. I harvest 600 pounds of food every day for the horses, the goats, the pigs, the chickens. They get 95% of the protein out of that mat of food. If you were to give an animal just barley and you did not grind it, they would get 3 to 5% of the protein out of that seed. You've heard the cliche, picking shit with the chickens? That comes from the horses and the cows. As it goes through them, the chickens come along and they pick out the seeds. They have a gizzard. They grind it up. There, the chickens are getting all the benefit. If you grind that seed, the animal gets up to 34% of the protein. But if you grow it with no herbicides, no pesticides, no fertilizer, if you mimic nature, if you just see what nature's doing, you get 95% of the protein out of the seed. I was paying $450 a ton for the worst hay in the world and driving 160 miles one way to get it. Now I have $50 a ton of the best hay in the world and I harvest every day. If you give it to your milk cows, they'll have 10% more butterfat. It's just a wonderful way to do it. I didn't invent this idea. I've made it better. You know, Edison had 1,034 patents, every patent in commercial production. He didn't invent the light bulb, 1,200 tries to make the light bulb. He didn't invent the telephone, but he invented the coil that made it work. Alexander Graham Bell invented it. He came up with this deal called Ahoy. Edison said, how about hello? So, I mean, you don't have to be the brightest bulb on the tree. You got to be a bulb. You just got to be one of the bulbs. And that brings me to this. So, every village has a landfill. I don't know. Has anybody, I would assume, senators, has anybody here been to a landfill in one of the villages?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's scary. Mm-hmm. I tell you that from now on, in my lifetime, I believe you'll never see another landfill in the villages. Because these air curtain burners here, they're clever. I used to have two of these. I got them off the pipeline. I sold them surplus. The manufacturer now builds these in Florida. Once again, this is not my idea, but we're going to make it way better for making power off of it. So you can now go to any village in Alaska, and for just a measly anywhere from $90,000 to $500,000, you can be making electricity and heat off of all of your trash. No more stuff blowing all over, no mess. And this is DEC approved in the state of Alaska for a Class 2, Class 3 landfill, and that is what you would have in Bush, Alaska. You can come to Fairbanks and see one of these run. You can come right to 9 Mile Richardson Highway. And I tell you, it's going to change the dynamics of the energy. You see, the first law of thermodynamics is you can't create energy and you can't destroy it. You can only change its state and you can only use it. Why do we want to bury it? Mm-hmm. Why do we want to have this mess? Why don't we take that energy? They paid $1.40 a pound to get that energy to the bush to bury it. It makes absolutely no sense. They pay $1.40 a pound to take it out there, and their plastic and stuff gets to blow all over. I'm telling you, there's a solution to every bit of this. And they get one or two or three bites of every apple. Why do you want just one bite of an apple when you could have two or three?
Question.
Senator Michiki, question.
Yes, Senator.
Have you evaluated the minimum village size where a firebox would be economical?
50 people. That's the average village size, and we have one for about $16,000 that will take care of their situation and delivered out there. Probably less than $50,000 delivered in training, and it makes no sense. They spend that easily in a year just on fuel for having it, for the equipment stuff, and let it blow all over. Yeah, I don't know why this hasn't happened before. I'll be honest. I'll tell you why it hasn't happened. Once again, addiction. I always know the reason things don't happen is because we've been addicted. It's sometimes it's hard to break addiction. It's hard to break it because it feels good. It's hard to break an addiction because it's easy. We've made it easy. I'm telling you, being addicted to oil is so easy. You fill the tank and forget about it. You know, doing these other things, it takes a little effort. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not so easy. So, we do have enough innovation, we have the intelligence, and we have the money. to provide Alaska with cheap energy and a vibrant economy. It's here now. We know this because we're doing this. We do this right now, and you asked about those of the sister companies that are actually doing these things as we speak. So we are one of several organizations that are doing innovative ideas here in the state, and we're not the only one. So we're looking forward to working with all of the native corporations, regional corporations, local communities, individuals, schools. We spend a lot of time educating, because really what we have here is the lack of it, right? Isn't it the lack of education and that knowledge hasn't been shared? We're something almost like the Chinese, not sharing them. I mean, the knowledge hasn't been shared. I mean, there's a lot of people who have never heard of a firebox, have never heard about an organic Rankine cycle, have never heard about a grow chamber, wouldn't have the slightest idea of how to go about putting it together. That's not their fault. That's our fault. That's why you're having these meetings, I would assume, is because you realize that the need is great, and the solutions are right at hand. And it doesn't take the state's money, and it doesn't take the federal government's money. We're spending the money now. And I think you would be remiss if you didn't have some solution for them. So the solution is real simple. First of all, you have to want to do it. GE Capital will finance every one of these projects. They have to come up with no capital, zero capital. At 6.5% interest, and you say, well, that's usury. It might be usury, but that's the number. And there's not one native project that they won't fund. Our homeowner fund. So when the state gets tight on money, which stay tuned, everybody and their brother's going to be down here asking you for money. I'm telling you, the opportunities are huge right now. There's more opportunity right now than there's ever been in the history of this state or the history of mankind, but it's not business as usual. And we get this opportunity because we get to kick the addiction. We get to kick the addiction that we're addicted to. I thank you very much for your time. If there's anything that I could answer, I would love to try and do it.
Committee members, Senator Egan, questions? Senator Marchicki?
Mr. Chair, yes. I just want to say you're a breath of fresh air. And some of the best careers I've ever had is at Chino Hot Springs. And the innovation that you do there, I mean, it's incredible.
Well, stay tuned. If you come in August the 18th, you'll get to see this new screw running. You'll get to see the hydrogen kitchen of the future, where all of your waste is turned into hydrogen, methane gas. We strip out the hydrogen. We cook all your food. We're going to have at least 1,000 people show up. We will take their waste, their human waste, and we'll be cooking your food on it right there that day. Now, DEC will have a problem with it, but it is the kitchen of the future. I mean, we really do take this serious. This is, this is a very, very serious, and we share this knowledge, so it's, we share it all, you know? And I think what each village needs is a spark plug. They need a spark plug, and they need to train that spark plug, and they need that spark plug to come back to that village and be a leader and lead them. And you see, they're spending all the money. There's money available, and every dime of everything we talk about, all the money stays in the state and the village. I mean, this coal situation will totally change the dynamics for the next several hundred years in Bush, Alaska. Usabelli has 300 years of Prudhoe Bay. There's 300 Prudhoe Bays right there that he has right now. And he's willing to help. He's willling to help up in Kotzebue. They have coal there. He's willing to help them in Galena with their coal mine. There should be coal mines. You just happen to be right, Senator. There's coal all over the state. Three-quarters of Alaska is coal, good coal. It makes no sense that we would take the life breath of the future of our children, gas and oil, and burn it like a bunch of drunken sailors when we have this coal that can be used for so many things.
Question? Senator Egan.
I'm still looking for a windmill, though, that you promised me.
You know, I got to tell you what, you know your fog situation down here. I have two windmills. If someone will help me with all the... If you'll... I asked you before, I said if you would take your pen You get the governor by executive order. Let me put the windmills up with no bullshit, no BS. No problem.
Sorry, I asked the question, Mr. Chair.
No problem. I told you I'll put them in at my expense. And the way we'll do this is it'll blow all the fog away. You'll never have a day you can't land an airplane. We'll blow the fog away so an airplane can land. We'll just spin the motor the other way. And we'll charge a little fee if they want to land because we're going to be... And then we'll make electricity the other direction. I'll fund the whole project, but he's supposed to get me executive order so I can do it. Because you know somebody's going to want to rain on the parade.
Senator Michiki.
Just a couple of comments. I think there's a factor of addiction, but there's also that factor of it's just the way it's always been. And it's really hard to break out of that. We see that in this building as well. There will be folks when we come up with the most creative solutions in Alaska, there will be folks walking around this building trying to convince us that it's not the right way to go. And what you see is the difference. Like, and you talked about some of the basic philosophies about raising a quality child at the beginning of this discussion.
Yes, sir.
But one thing I want to propose to you is the difference between a kid who has a parent that purchases a treehouse, sets it on the ground, and that kid's not involved with building a treehouse, and the difference on how those kids look at problems. If we hand our children everything and don't allow them to create their own solutions by working alongside their parents, they don't have as much to work with.
You're absolutely
so,
right.
So we absolutely have to turn loose the spirit of Alaskans. Mm-hmm. We've been providing the best solutions to energy almost never. In almost every case, it's not been... not even a good solution, but it's been almost the poorest choice. We have an uncanny knack of playing our cards wrong when it comes to energy. So I really enjoyed your talk. I hope it will get folks motivated.
What I don't understand, sir, is that we study everything to death. You know, I mean, I'm sorry, sir, but everybody is appropriating money. You can get money for any three letters of the alphabet to do a study. Well, great. But you see, what's wrong with common sense? I find it's not very common. I almost see common sense nowhere used anymore. But if we would use it, then that means that we would do a project and study as we go along. You know, I mean, I did this biomass project. I'm not going to tell you that I didn't have a lot of problems with it, opportunities. Not problems, I had a lot of opportunities with it. I changed a lot of things in it. I learned a lot. But we now have some turbines running at 28,000 RPM in a magnetic field, which is not being done anywhere else that I know of off of biomass. And we now are taking ash and turning it into some of the best cement in the world. And now because of that, I learned enough to go out and build this screw expander. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the knowledge that I've gained from that, a lot of people would say that was a failure. I would say they can kiss what Jesus Christ wrote into Nazareth on. Because, I can't say that word. But what Jesus Christ wrote into Nazareth on. Because look what I've learned. Look what I've learned. I could have been like Webster's definition. Failures if you don't succeed. Some people would say that I didn't succeed. I would say, I haven't even... First of all, I haven't operated. And second of all, I haven't quit. And I'm going to make it a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And we share all the knowledge.
Senator Coghill?
Yeah.
Mr. Co-Chairman?
Well, on the energy front, you have done a lot of innovation. And you've spark-plugged a lot of good ideas, and for that I'm very grateful. But one of the things that kind of gets lost in this, I think, is what you're doing on food growing, too. Certainly what you've taken from Chena Hot Springs and put into work. But this taking the barley is just phenomenal. You know, so then it's a matter of, you know, how do we take whatever heat we can from the earth, go ahead and produce some of those things. I think it's phenomenal. It's one of those things where we could do it here for our own red meat industry, and I think that kind of turns around the economics of red meat in Alaska, I think. I think there's some good things there.
Do you realize that every dime, do you see that it's a synergy, right? And every dime stays in Alaska? You know, since the beginning of time, no one's worked harder on agriculture than your father. No one. From day one. His dad,
Senator Coghill Sr. was our voice for agriculture. And with that being said, now I honestly believe we have this down to a science in Delta. We are the best barley growers in the world. I would put Delta farmers up against anybody in the world growing barley, because barley is a good hardy crop and it can take a little cold and it does well. I would put our farmers up down there against anybody in the world for growing barley. But they haven't had a good market for it. Now we're going to provide them a market where all 84,000 acres will be into production, because they're now going to have a market, because now we can grow the food to feed Alaska. You know, we worry about oil. We worry about where we're going to get money to fund this and fund that. We better worry about food, because we have zero food security. We talk about a lot of stuff. It just drives me nuts. And we never talk about the most important energy in the world is the food we eat. It gets very little attention, the food we eat. Now, that's the most important energy. And it kind of always gets pushed under the rug. Well, I'm telling you now, it's going to come to the forefront, because we're going to make it so that everybody can be in charge of their energy. We call it bringing power to the people. And that's the way it has to be. And we don't need any of your money. I mean,
thank you.
You know, I mean, how many people come down here and tell you, everybody comes down here and wants something from you. What I want is less regulations, and I want that executive order from you, Senator, so that I can put those windmills up down here. That's what I want.
Thank you, Bernie.
Bernie, thank you for your presentation. I also like to thank our earlier guests. We can see the synergy between the two presentations. I appreciate it. And meeting is we're just about. We have no meeting scheduled for Thursday, March 28th. And without objection, I'd like to bring the committee to a close tonight. This morning, thank you. We're adjourned.